I'd like to call the April 18th meeting of the Columbia City Council to order. Would you please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'd like to thank you all for joining us today. If you weren't here at 5 o'clock, my name is Brian Treese. I'm the new mayor of the City of Columbia. And for those of you that are joining us on TV, I'd like to welcome you to a new season of the Columbia City Council. We do have a slight cast change. We have a couple reruns back with us as well. But we hope you enjoy this new season of Columbia City government. Madam Clerk, would you call the roll, please?
Mr. Treese?
Present.
Mr. Ruffin?
Here.
Mr. Trapp? Mr. Scala?
Rerun number one, here.
Mr. Thomas? Ms. Mauser?
Here.
Ms. Peters?
Here.
Madam Clerk, would you read the minutes of the previous meeting?
Could I move unanimous consent to waive
the gentleman's request unanimous consent to suspend the reading of the minutes. Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, are there any additions, corrections, or additions to the minutes as distributed? Anyone? Is there a motion to approve the minutes as distributed?
So moved.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The minutes are approved. Approval of the agenda. Are there any changes to the agenda that has been distributed and published on the city website?
Yes. Could I pull...
Councilman Peters, for what reason do you seek recognition?
To pull two things off the consent agenda.
Proceed.
Mayor. B-8216 and B-8416.
Madam Clerk, would you add those to the end of old business? Would that be the appropriate calendar? Thank you. Councilman Nauser?
Yes, I need to recuse myself from voting on the Liquor License Review Board.
Is there any objection to Councilman Nauser recusing herself from the appointment to the board and commission list? I would make a motion that we accept the request to abstain from that vote. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Scala. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Ayes have it. Thank you. With those adjustments to the meeting, there are several opportunities for public comment, including public hearings and old business and new business. We also have opportunities for those who have requested public comment. And for those of you that are joining us, we do have agendas printed in the back if you would like to follow along with us. I'd like to ask for Angie Haney or Ivania Woods or Tefanisha Williams to come to the podium and speak.
Mayor Treese.
Oh, Madam Clerk.
Can we officially amend or approve the agenda?
Is there
agenda
a motion to
amended?
Approve the agenda as amended?
So moved.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? The agenda is approved. Thank you, Madam Clerk.
Thank you.
Please join us.
Good evening.
Good evening.
My name is Angie Haney, and this is Tefanisha Williams. And I'm the president of the Association of Black Graduate and Professional Students, and she's the president-elect. The goal of our organization is to provide additional resources to support MU's Black graduate and professional students to help them achieve their academic and professional goals. For the last few years, the ABGPS board and members have discussed doing something to acknowledge the significant history of the Stuart Road Bridge. The intersection of Providence and Stuart Road represents a space people enter on a regular basis without awareness of its significant history. The Stuart Road Bridge was the site of the last recorded public lynching in Columbia. Given the 2016 Black History Month theme, which was Hallowed Grounds, Sites and Rights of Black Memory, we decided this was the year to put our energy into making the memorial happen. It turns out that our goal aligns with the effort in the greater Columbia community to create a trail of historical markers throughout the city. For example, the Sharp End marker was placed near 5th and Walnut as part of the effort to recognize contributions of Black entrepreneurs. We decided to use the same style as the Sharp End marker, except with the photo of the Stuart Road Bridge and the following inscription, which is entitled, Lest We Forget, Lynching at the Stuart Road Bridge. And the inscription contains the following. Near this place, James T. Scott, a Black janitor in the medical school at MU, was killed on April 29th, 1923. A mob brought Mr. Scott to the bridge, placed a noose around his neck, and pushed him over the railing while hundreds of spectators watched. The MU's presence and alleged student involvement in Mr. Scott's murder stirred public outrage and made front-page news across the U.S. Although charges were filed against the leaders of the mob, none were convicted. Let this site remind us of the injustices of our historical legacy. As we continue the fight against systems of oppression, let us reflect on how to better our community for all Colombians. The lynching at Stewart Road Bridge reminds us of how far we have come and the work we have yet to do. Commissioned by MU's Association of Black Graduate Professional Students in 2016. So the inscription was reviewed by experts in the field before finalized. We launched a GoFundMe campaign in December 2015 and received 48 donations totaling over $1,935, or exactly $1,935. We are incredibly grateful to all of our donors and everyone who has contributed to help make this endeavor possible. Today, the Association of Black Graduate Professional Students would like to donate the marker to the City of Columbia. Our hope is that after installation, the marker will remain in its place for years to come. We believe that the placement of the marker will serve as a reminder of our past and encourage the community to continue to move forward and work together to make Columbia a better place for all. As mentioned, this marker is part of a larger African American Trail project, which you will receive a report on at the end of the year. We appreciate your time, and we're open to any questions you might have. Thank you.
I want to thank you for your leadership in this regard. As you may know, as a past member of the Historic Preservation Commission, Columbia's history and its preservation and retelling has been very important to me. And for those of you, when I travel east on Stewart Road approaching Providence, I like to stop at the hill there at Stewart Road, and you can almost imagine the way the Stewart Road Bridge would have continued on and connected where the power plant sits now with the train tracks running underneath that. And I think your marker is going to be an important reminder of what happened at that site in 1923. And so I thank you for your leadership and your fundraising and for your gift. And I look forward to the report at the end of our council meeting. Any other questions or comments?
Yes, I also want to say that this is great. This is great to see this generation retell the story. As you may know, I was a part of the committee that placed the headstone on Mr. Scott's grave, and it was a community-wide issue that reached all the way to Canada and brought all of the affected families back together again for the first time. And so that was a wonderful experience, but it is hidden in the Columbia Cemetery. And so unless you go into the segregated part of the cemetery, you won't be able to find Mr. Scott's gravestone. So by pursuing this project that places this marker in a very public space where there's lots of traffic and lots of pedestrian traffic particularly, you have done us a great service. And so we thank you for your efforts. And I also want to say that we are installing another tribute to James Scott adjacent to Second Baptist Church in a memorial prayer garden. We have a memorial bench there for him as well, because as you know, he was a member of Second Baptist Church. And so thank you very much. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other Mr. Scala?
Just a comment. I also want to express my appreciation. This is kind of an attempt at unhiding some of these kinds of things and things that we struggle with in this community with the history of the Civil War and so on and so forth. A continuation of the Blind Boone restoration, the Blind Boone home. It's also the Sharp End commemoration. This is an additional piece to that puzzle. Frankly, I look at some of these things even in terms of public safety. It's not really a reparation, if you will, but it's at least an acknowledgement that we've made some mistakes in the past. We ought to recognize those mistakes, and we ought to correct them when we can. This is a step in the right direction. I appreciate your work in that regard.
Thank you.
Seeing no further comment, thank you so much. Our next order of business will be appointments to boards and commissions, and we have a list of candidates that can potentially be made to 10 boards and commissions. However, as you can see, we are down two council members and we have one abstention. What would be the will of this group as to how to proceed? Councilman Nauzer.
I would like to ask that we postpone voting on any boards and commission members this evening for multiple reasons. One, that we do not have a full council here this evening. And second, we do have an applicant who has applied to every position that is open. And I would really like to instruct or ask that our city clerk contact this individual and ask him which commissions he feels most passionate about applying for. I don't think it would be fair to have him apply for every council or position, especially since he is the sole applicant for many of these. And I think that would be very overburdensome to be appointed to all those commissions. So I would ask that we work on that. And I think some others had some other issues mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah, I'll second that.
Mr. Scala.
Motion. But there's just a comment. So do we second the motion that you made a motion?
I made a motion, yes.
And I'll second that, and then we can talk about that a little bit.
So Councilman Nowzer's made a motion that we delay appointments to the boards and commissions. We do have a second. Do you want to comment on that? Any discussion?
Yeah, there is the issue of someone applying. Did you want to say something?
Madam Clerk?
May I ask that at least for there's a few, I don't know how long you want me to postpone it, but if you do it till the second.
So a date certain, correct.
If you do it till the second meeting in May, or even if not, there's still some terms that are going to be up between now and then. So maybe a one-time extension for anybody who's an existing member for their term to be extended one meeting or until you make a new appointment might be safe to do so you don't have quorum issues.
Shall I add that to my original motion to extend anybody whose term is expiring to the second meeting in May and then postpone any decision to the second meeting in May?
Correct. Would you accept that as a friendly amendment?
That's fine.
For your second, for the purposes of a second. Mr. Scala, proceed.
So the issue, there is that issue of someone applying to lots of boards and commissions. Normally we have, there are some folks that there aren't as many as three or so commissions. Most people just have one. Some people have two. We get a regular list with the agenda that announces that kind of thing. But then, you know, there is really this informal hierarchy of the extent to which some of these boards and commissions are rated, if you will. There's kind of a first-tier group with the planning and zoning and the Board of Adjustment and some others. There's kind of a second-tier group with environment, energy, and so on, depending on the workload and all the rest of it. So what we used to do in the old days, in the old days around 2007, 2008, particularly for planning and zoning, this is near and dear to my heart because when I first applied to start getting involved in all of this civic work, it had to do with planning and zoning, and that was 1999, if I recall correctly. There were nine candidates, and we tried to winnow that. And at the time, the city council would interview all nine candidates for 10 or 15 minutes. It was a considerable workload. Eventually, we got to the point where we would have a kind of a grid, if you will, to rate candidates to narrow this down to four or five candidates, so that when then we could interview them for for 5 minutes or 10 minutes or however, whatever was the pleasure of the council. I think that's a reasonable approach to take, particularly for some of these very prominent commissions that have lots of work to do. And I would beg the council's indulgence to consider some of these top-tier commissions, at least, if not more, to really kind of go back to that method of interviewing candidates in addition to just taking their applications.
So we have a motion and a second, and for the purposes of discussion, you've recommended that for at least for planning and zoning, which is what we have open
and
now.
Board of Adjustment.
And Board of Adjustment. If you all would entertain this as a friendly suggestion, what I would suggest, since we are delaying the appointment to these for another 4 weeks, that we reopen and re-advertise these boards and commissions just to make sure that we have a broad pool of applicants. We've got two council members that I think would benefit from having additional applicants. And, you know, with everything that's coming through planning and zoning this summer, right, I think it would be good to have a good look, a wide pool of applicants, and that gives us some time to interview them either formally or informally before the next second meeting in May.
Yeah.
Any objection? Without any objection?
No.
Is that clear? So we have a motion, we have a second that we're going to delay to the second week in May, all the boards and commissions. We're going to re-advertise all of the boards and commissions with the hope of having interviews for at least planning and zoning and Board of Adjustments. Any additional discussion?
Councilman Peters.
And extend the terms. Thank you, Councilman Ruffin.
Right.
Extend the terms for those that have expiring terms until that second meeting in May.
Yes, and Ms. Nowzer and Mr. Scala are agreeable to adding the re-advertising to the motion?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any objections? Ayes have it. Thank you. Our next order of business will be scheduled public comment, and there are several opportunities for public comment, and those that have contacted the city manager's office by noon on Wednesday prior to the city council meeting have the opportunity to speak at the beginning of the meeting on any topic that's not on the agenda. Only two people can speak on the same topic, and tonight we have one request, and that individual is Rachel Taylor. Are you available? Thank you, Rachel. Great to see you. Please proceed at your convenience.
My name is Rachel Taylor from 119 Clinton Drive, and I'm here representing Race Matters Friends. I'm speaking on the second pillar of Pillar 4 of the President's Task Force on 21st Century Policing. As you all know, the Race Matters Friends group has been working through this very lengthy report, comment by comment. We're on Pillar 4 now. I bet you're all excited. I'm going to be focusing on items 4.5 through 4.7. First of all, I'd like to congratulate you, Mayor Treese, on your first official City Council meeting. We are all looking forward to the new leadership you're bringing to this office. And during your campaign, you emphasized commitment to community policing in Columbia to keep our families safe. I strongly urge you to go ahead and read this report. It's pretty long, but you can do it. And understand how the Columbia Police Department approaches their role in these conversations that we have ongoing about community policing. I have two stories to tell that highlight the need for action in following up on the action items outlined in the report. I'll tell the encouraging story first. Items 4.6 and 4.7 ask for communities to adopt policies and programs that address the needs of children and youth most at risk for crime or violence and reduce aggressive law enforcement tactics that stigmatize youth and marginalize their participation in schools and communities. And that communities need to affirm and recognize the voices of youth in community decision-making, facilitate youth-led research and problem-solving, and develop and fund youth leadership training and life skills through positive youth and police collaboration and interactions, pages 93 through 100. The report details a memorandum of understanding that allows Columbia Public Schools to handle minor school-based offenses without referring students to juvenile justice. The Columbia Public Schools and the police department have worked together to offer alternatives to out-of-school suspensions and expulsions. This is a story of success. I have good news. During our candidate conversation series, Jim Witt, who was reelected to school board recently, affirms that through cooperation with CPD, Columbia Public Schools has been able to reduce the out-of-school suspensions by two-thirds. It's very impressive. This important tool in interrupting the school-to-prison pipeline that criminalizes the behavior of students of color and involves them in the justice system as children instead of giving them a chance to succeed and exit their school years with equal opportunities to get hired or go to college. I challenge you, Mayor Treese, and the rest of the council, to continue to give voices to students of color, like the powerful students that we've seen tonight, in community decision making, by involving them in the beginning of policy making, giving them positions of power to execute decisions, and involving them in all aspects of policy implementation as leaders. Students who are given positions of responsibility become invested in the community. My second story is not so encouraging. Item 4.5 says that community policing emphasizes working with neighborhood residents to co-produce public safety. When Mr. Treese mentions keeping our families safe, I want to ask, safe from whom? When we talk about policing, we often assume that criminals are dangerous people out there who aren't us. Community policing starts from the assumption that we are all accountable for each other. Criminals are not bad people out there. They are us, and we are responsible for them and accountable for offering criminals a way to build up the community. This is where the discouraging story comes in. Talking about neighbors as if they are terrorists doesn't help us keep each other accountable. I was at a party for my mother-in-law and two of her friends, retired ladies, told me they'd been to the public library to hear a police officer's presentation. He convinced them the police had found ties between Al-Qaeda and attendees at our local mosque. The retired women talked about how Middle Eastern families had moved into a friend's neighborhood and how the friends were nervous. They said, they're nervous around those people. They tried to convince me that Colombia had a terrible crime problem. That's fear-mongering, and that's dangerous because it leads to discriminatory legislation and policies when scared people vote. This is not community policing, convincing rich retired women that Colombia's Muslim community is tied to Al-Qaeda or that Colombia is full of criminals. We should keep all our families safe. I challenge you to continue to involve the community in transparent decision-making about policing and police policies.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor, and I appreciate your comments. Councilman Nasser?
Thank you for presenting that information to us, and I just wanted to let you know that as well, some other good work that has been happening in our community that I don't think that gets touted very much, but the 13th Circuit Court and the Juvenile Office have been working very close, and the culmination of that memorandum of understanding was work between the Juvenile Office, the Police Department, the Sheriff, and the school. And through the Ann Casey Foundation, our circuit here in Columbia has been working very hard to address the school-to-prison pipeline and keeping kids out of the juvenile justice system, and they are actively working on the problem of disproportionate minority contact within our circuit as well. So I just wanted to pass that information along to you, that that is something that has actually been worked on for the past several years. So.
And I appreciate our dialogue during the campaign. I hope it's a foundation for future discussion. Next order of business will be public hearings. There are no items on this week's agenda that require a public hearing. Under old business, we do have a few items, some of which have been asked to be tabled. Madam Clerk, would you read Resolution 35-16?
Council Bill 35-16 is a resolution setting a public hearing on the voluntary annexation of property located at the western terminus of Smith Drive, approximately 3,000 feet west of Scott Boulevard.
Staff, I understand there's an amendment sheet to request further tabling of this.
That's right.
Mr. Teddy?
This was tabled at your last meeting to this date, and the resolution set the hearing for this date that was not withdrawn or amended at that time, so it would be appropriate to amend it with a new date and approve a resolution setting a public hearing.
State statute requires 60 days from the request of voluntary annexation to the date of a public hearing.
That is the time limit for conducting the hearing, and then you need not make a decision on the annexation itself for some time later. And in fact, we won't introduce the ordinance annexing the property until the date of the hearing, so that will follow by at least one meeting.
Does any member of council desire to seek recognition to inquire of staff? Is there a motion to adopt the amendment sheet to delay the public hearing on R35-16 to the next meeting?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Councilman Nasser, second by Mr. Ruffin. We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed, the amendment sheet is adopted.
Mayor?
Madam Clerk, would you like to call the roll for?
Yes, and for clarification purposes, I just want to make sure I understand. We are now amending this resolution to set the public hearing for the May 2nd meeting. Is that correct?
That is correct. To adopt the amendment sheet, setting the public hearing on May 2nd, if you
I will call.
Agenda would support that.
Okay, thank you.
We have a motion and a second. Would you like to call the roll for the record?
Council Bill 3516, as amended, Mr. Treese?
Aye.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Ms. Snauzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Next order of business would be B79-16, and since they are somewhat related, and there is also a motion request to table Council Bill 80-16. Madam Clerk, would you read the bill?
Council Bill 7916 is an ordinance extending the corporate limits of the City of Columbia, Missouri by annexing property located on the southwest corner of Brown School Road and Rangeline Street, Highway 763, directing the city clerk to give notice of the annexation, placing the property annexed in districts PUD 1201 1, CP, C3, and R3, approving a statement of intent and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective, second reading. Council Bill 8016 is an ordinance authorizing a development agreement with Christensen Investments, LLC, for property located on the southwest corner of Brown School Road and Rangeline Street, Highway 763, directing the city clerk to have a certified copy of the agreement recorded and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective, second reading.
Director Teddy, is this under your?
Yes, sir. And this is an annexation and also a request for multiple zoning classifications on the 70-acre tract. And seeing that we do have a written request to table this to May 2nd, I think I just asked the council if you have any questions.
Are there any questions?
Out the case.
Questions by council. Is there a motion to accept the request to table until the May 2nd meeting?
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Scala, seconded by Mr. Nauzer. Are there any discussion? Madam Clerk, would you call the roll?
You can do that by voice vote if you would like. But if you'd like me to call the roll, I can.
All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Council Bill B86-16.
Council Bill 8616 is an ordinance amending Chapter 29 of the City Code relating to self-service storage facilities and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective, second reading.
Mr. Teddy.
This is a text amendment to Chapter 29, known as the Zoning Ordinance. This is something that Council authorized the Planning and Zoning Commission to work on last fall. Originated as a request by a property owner that desired to develop their property with a self-storage facility. However, your action on this would not grant approval to any one piece of property. This is really just amending the process and the standards for so-called self-storage facilities. Here's some images of what we're talking about. The limiting factor for these is that uniquely in our commercial districts, a 14-foot height maximum is required for this use and this use alone. And it's the desire of the, it was the desire of the property owner to seek a taller structure, such as represented by the climate-controlled structures that that industry has now been building for a number of years that have a multi-story profile and would not be allowed in any district under our zoning ordinance. So that's the main change to this ordinance, but as the Planning and Zoning Commission began its work, they felt that there ought to be a trade-off, if you will, between the grant of additional height and some design standards to ensure quality of the structures and compatibility of the use with its surroundings. And there are already some standards built into the self-storage as it exists in the ordinance. This would add some more, including some architectural standards. And so here's a summary of what the commission is recommending. As of right, these would be allowed in the C3, which is the general business district that's found, for example, on Business Loop 70, parts of Rangeline Road, parts of Providence Road, and elsewhere on generally commercial corridors. That allowance would be subject to a number of standards, could not be within 100 feet of a residential lot. There would be a requirement for quality materials in the buildings. There would be a requirement for, I'll call them neutral colors or earth tone colors. And that's something that could be administered with the keeping of a color palette. For those that are curious about how we enforce color, we don't currently for any other type of use, but that was a feeling of the commission that that would be appropriate in this case, avoid the garish colors if these are going to be large buildings. And then street trees would be required, and the building height limit would be the same as the district itself, which is 45 feet and not more than four stories. So here's a summary of the revisions. There's also a revision to the section for general industrial, which is called the M1, that would also remove the 14-foot height limit. It was felt there that there could be a reduced standard since normally that's going to be a less visible environment and with less contact with residential there. So this amendment that you have in front of you did get the unanimous approval of the commission, those present 8-0. As you see it, there was some testimony given by the consultant for the property owner that got this whole thing started. No other comments I'm aware of.
Does any member of council desire to seek recognition? Councilman Scala.
I would. Thank you. Just a question. I'm wondering if this has any bearing. I mean, is this totally separate from the future consideration that we're going to make with respect to the Unified Development Code? Does the draft issues in the Unified Development Code, does that address any of this, or that is totally separate?
The Clarion consultants quickly identified that 14-foot height maximum as something obsolete. They pointed out that the industry has been building so-called climate-controlled buildings for storage of smaller articles. You know, the industry had been building what were basically flat roof garages for a long time, but now it's evolved where you have the taller profile buildings. So they did recommend that. They also carried forward other conditions that didn't relate to the 14-foot height in the draft.
So this is consistent with the draft recommendation, not to say that this
That's correct. And this, some of the aesthetic standards go beyond, in fact, but they can be added to that. And I think normally we would carry forward any recent ordinance that you would approve. This was done, again, as I say, it was started at the request of property owner. We would rather do a text amendment, even though it's a generally longer process, than have someone request a variance. To such a great degree, right. It doesn't seem appropriate. So,
yeah, appreciate it. Thank you.
Any further discussion? So, Director Teddy, we actually had some discussion about this in the Downtown Leadership Council and some of the changes. As a follow-up to Mr. Scala's request, will the changes, if they're adopted today, will those be incorporated in the Uniform Development Code? Because there were some references to self-storage facilities within that area. So whatever we adopt here would carry through to that.
Yes.
Is there any C3 in the greater downtown area?
There's not. There's M1, however.
This C3 would cascade into that M1.
Providence Road has M1 on it, so that's one area that would be affected by this. And I'm speaking of the segment of Providence Road where the fast food restaurant and the gas station's located. That's, I think, generally thought to be part of downtown, but along the Flat Branch. There's still some legacy M1. There's also some legacy M1 in the old Wabash Railroad area, too.
Any further discussion? Is there a motion on B86-16? Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Is there anyone from the public that would like to speak about architectural design standards for self-storage facilities? Seeing none, is there any further discussion? Thank you for that reminder and your patience. Is there a motion to adopt Council Bill 86-16?
So moved.
Madam
Mayor Therese, we don't really, unless you want to change things, we don't really need to have a motion because we have a bill that's in front of you, so we can just call the vote on the bill if you would like.
Very good. Thank you. Madam Clerk, would you like to call the roll?
Council
on the board and call the roll.
Council Bill 86-16, Mr. Treese?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
By your vote, you have adopted B86-16. Madam Clerk, did you have two items from the consent agenda that were added to this, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Would you like to read the first item that has been moved to from the consent agenda?
Sure. Council Bill 8216 is an ordinance granting a variance from the subdivision regulations and a waiver from the requirements of the city code relating to construction of a sidewalk along a portion of the south side of Nifong Boulevard and east of Peachtree Drive, 110 Nifong Boulevard, accepting a deed of dedication for roadway purposes and conveyances for street and utility purposes, directing the city clerk to have the conveyances recorded, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Director Teddy, would you like to present a staff report?
This is the break time with a Jiffy Lube business also within it. So it's a gas station, convenience store, and auto service combination. It's existing developed property. They've recently applied for a building permit, and according to Chapter 24 of the city ordinance, although it's already subdivided and developed, it is required, a sidewalk is required in a building permit on an arterial road. And this item went to the Planning and Zoning Commission as a variance, and the applicant offered right-of-way in lieu of building the sidewalk, recognizing that Nifong is a future city street project, and sidewalk would be designed and built on both sides of Nifong when that occurs. Could be done as a unified contract at that time. The easement would benefit the city in the sense it wouldn't have to be acquired as part of the project. It's 5 feet of additional right-of-way. In reviewing this request, it was noted that, and you can see some of this in the aerial, there's generally not sidewalks on either side of Nifong, with the exception of, and it's actually another gas station and a bank, have sidewalk on the north side. And then out of the view where the bank is built at the corner of Bethel and Nifong, that's a recent two-lot subdivision, so sidewalk was built there as well. None exists on the south side. This whole Rockbridge subdivision, as it's known, number of commercial uses, has several lots, and evidently weren't required to build sidewalk at the time of initial subdivision and development. So the commission is recommending to you that this variance be granted, and it would relieve the applicant for that building permit of the burden of building the sidewalk, however, with the condition that they provide an appropriate roadway easement. Try to answer any questions.
Councilman Peters, you asked to pull this off the agenda. Would you like to comment?
Actually, why don't we let Councilman Nauzer, it's her ward.
Thank you.
She's got a question.
Councilman Nauzer, please proceed.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions. First of all, was the applicant notified that this was going to be pulled off of the consent agenda to have an opportunity to come and speak before us? Does anyone know?
No, I would say no, because I
just found out.
I wanted to pull it off. It was probably 4 or 5 when I was reading this, and I thought, I don't understand this. So.
Okay. Well, I just would be if there would be any potential that this may not pass, that we give the applicant at least a fair opportunity to come and speak and give their case for the variance. And so I will put that out there for the time being. But the request would be the requirement would be to build the sidewalk correct along Nifong and Peachtree Drive, correct? Or is that, are the variances just for the sidewalk along Peachtree? So that they wouldn't have to build that sidewalk. So where?
It's the east side of Peachtree, and I omitted that from the presentation. So this segment, as well as
Nifong.
The easement that I'm speaking of, though, relates to Nifong.
So the easement that they're granting to us is along Nifong, because we're going to be widening Nifong, so it would be kind of useless for them to build a sidewalk at this time, since that is in our most recent 10-year capital improvement bond or issue.
That would be part of the reasoning. The other would be it's already a developed property, so there's an incremental change to it. And they put in their worksheet that we require that their estimate of cost of the sidewalks would be one quarter of the total project cost.
And if I recall correctly, I think there's kind of a drainage ditch in there too, so it would require probably a lot of site work.
Yeah, it's very different to design a project for one frontage as opposed to a roadway for an entire section of roadway. So okay. Submit that. I couldn't tell you the details comparing them side by side.
So
if we grant this variance, then we will have the easement for widening Nifong and putting sidewalks in on both sides?
At our expense.
The easement or the sidewalks?
Sidewalks. Councilman Scala?
Yeah, I just had a question just to straighten this out. Normally, when we're talking about variances and exceptions, there is a checklist that we go through, whether it's challenged topography or so on and so forth. I didn't see all of that. Was that the basis of the Planning and Zoning Commission's unanimous recommendation? Did they consider that in terms of, or did we have a checklist for this particular?
We do. We actually drew from the city subdivision code criteria, and then also, and that's looking at it as if it were a subdivision mm-hmm. project, but then there's also variance criteria for Chapter 24, which is the I call it the streets code, street sidewalks and public mm-hmm. places. That's the part of the code that really applies here because it says even if it's developed property, any building permit requires sidewalks to be provided when it's multifamily zoning and higher. Mm-hmm. So that would include all commercial zoning.
Yeah, we always struggle with this because it's always the sidewalks to nowhere that people are supposed to put this in. I was just wondering if they went through this process to make sure that this was challenged topographically.
We provided our findings. We found that the factors really aren't supported if we follow
the variance
them to the letter. However, we acknowledge that providing right-of-way would be a somewhat equitable trade-off. Mm-hmm. And again, considering the scale of the project, if this was building a gas station brand new, that scale of investment might be a different matter because those sidewalks would be a much lower proportion of the overall cost. So I think that was
pretty. Councilman Nasser.
And so as a trade-off, you were saying you felt that it's equitable, especially considering when we put in Nifong, we would be putting in the sidewalks through that road project all along that corridor, but then the break time would be singled out to pay their own sidewalk. And we would have to go through and acquire easements, which we may have to use eminent domain to acquire and pay.
Yeah, the right-of-way agent would contact this right. property and any others for which right-of-way.
And have to pay full value for commercial property as opposed to them granting us. Do we have a value, an estimate of value of what that?
I don't have that with me tonight. I apologize.
Okay. So, again, I'm going to go back to my first comment is, I don't know if we vote on this and there's a chance that it could fail, if we should postpone this to allow the applicant to come and speak. I will defer to what my fellow councilpeople. I think it would only be fair if you're going to vote against it to request this to be tabled.
Ms. Peters?
Yeah, I'm okay with voting for it. I just wanted, you know, because I've sat next to Mr. Thomas, who's not here tonight so much, and he's such a sidewalk proponent. I was like, what? We're getting a variance for a sidewalk, but it makes sense when we're considering widening the road anyway, and we need an easement. It would be stupid to put a sidewalk in and then dig it up in 4 years. So I'm okay with it. I just had a question about it.
You know. So, Director Teddy, what I'm new here. But my
doing a good job though.
My general philosophy here is that the government should be consistent, and there's no other sidewalks here. What did we do with those other property owners? Why did they not develop a sidewalk? Why is there one across the street at their competitor gas station? I mean, do we have the variance? Is there a variance? Do we have the right of way for those other parcels as well? Are they expected to be putting in a sidewalk at some point to nowhere?
Any other business or owner of a lot along that Nifong corridor would go through this same process. We would tell them as part of their building permit they'd have to put in the sidewalk. Those that are simply operating, though, they're not going to be assigned that responsibility, if you will. So,
is there a reason why this just came up now? Because that gas station has been there.
Right,
correct.
Right. Yeah, they're making some kind of small expansion
that triggered
to it,
this,
and
mechanism.
That's what triggers it.
Very good.
So it's a small.
Any other
addition.
Further discussion? I'm inclined to call the roll on this. Madam Clerk, would you call the roll?
Would we want to open it up to the public? I doubt there's
anyone
here.
Is there anyone that would like to comment? Forgive me. Seeing none, Madam Clerk, would you call the roll?
Council Bill 8216, Mr. Treese?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Thank you. Next order of business. There should be one more item under
correct.
Old business.
Council Bill 8416 is an ordinance approving the final plat of Russell Subdivision Plat 5, accepting the dedication of rights of way and easements, authorizing a performance contract, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff report, Director Teddy.
Yeah, this might be a little bit hard to see. It's the black and white version of the location map, but this is a tract of land that's located at Russell Boulevard, directly across Rollins Road from Russell Boulevard Elementary School. Owner is dividing it into two lots, and there is an error in the first paragraph of the discussion, your staff report, referring to it as a preliminary plat. Preliminary plat's already been done, so this is the final plat creating that second lot. And turn the page and we'll just examine what the plat looks like. There's an existing house on one of the lots. House exists, of course, and then a lot two will be created, just slightly less than 1 acre with frontage on Rollins. And some easement in the back. There's a green space easement. There's also a sanitary sewer easement. The sewer is going to come from the back of the lot to serve both of those lots with sewer service. So.
Does any member of council desire to seek recognition? Any questions? Councilman Peters.
So this is a public sewer that we're going to be putting in through the backyards here?
Yeah, that's right. We wouldn't have two lots share a line, so anytime there's two laterals that connect to a line, that line needs to be public within an easement. And the sewer utility's been working with these plans, and they've signed off on the design. So.
And then
there's existing easement back there for the sewer. That's the natural direction of the drainage. So,
and then it drains to the west?
Does that drain into the public? Yeah, it looks like it goes back, and then there's, I don't know what the contours are for that, but you can see off the site here where there's the existing sewer line is called out. So,
okay.
So apparently a number of those homes have the sewer in the back, so.
Right, but it's connecting to a public sewer?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was pretty much my question.
Any further discussion? Is there anyone from the public that would like to testify in favor? Anyone who would like to testify in opposition? Any additional discussion? Madam Clerk, would you like to call the roll?
Council Bill 8416, Mr. Treese?
Aye.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas? Or sorry, Ms. Nauzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Madam Clerk, would you like to read the balance of the consent bills, please?
Items on the consent agenda include bills 8116, 8316, 8516, 8716, 8816, 8916, 9016, 9116, 9216, and resolutions 4116, 4216, 4316, 4416, 4516, and 4616.
Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Bills 81, 16, 83, 16, 85, 16, 87, 16, 88, 16, 89, 16, 90, 16, 91, 16, 92, 16, and resolutions 41, 16, 42, 16, 43, 16, 44, 16, 45, 16, and 46, 16. Mr. Treese?
Yes on all bills and resolutions.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes on all bills and resolutions.
Mr. Scala?
Yes on all bills and resolutions.
Ms. Nauzer?
Yes on all bills and resolutions.
Peters?
Yes.
Next order of business will be new business. Madam Clerk, would you please read Resolution 47-16?
Council Bill 4716 is a resolution authorizing the installation of a street light on the east side of Elderbrook Drive, authorizing the purchasing agent to request proposals for consulting services for an evaluation of street lighting levels in the East Campus neighborhood, and a determination of the scope and costs associated with a lighting project.
Staff report.
The staff street lighting committee recently had three requests come through for the installations of new street lights. As mentioned, one was a post-op luminaire near the end of Edelbrook Drive, one was for improving lighting levels throughout the East Campus neighborhood, and one was for the installation of a streetlight at the entrance to Off-Broadway condos. The staff street lighting committee recommended installing a single post-op luminaire near the end of Edelbrook Drive and has reached out to property owners that would be most affected and found no opposition. This area is along the east side of Elderbrook Drive, dead end. The street lighting committee has reviewed this project and recommends installing a single post-op luminaire as requested. The staff street lighting committee also received a single request for installing a single street light off the entrance of Off-Broadway condos along the West Broadway, and staff street lighting committee recommends disapproving this request. The entrance to Off-Broadway condos along West Broadway is on State Highway Road TT, which is maintained by MoDOT, and the private drive into Off-Broadway condos complex. Neither of these roads are currently within the city's responsibility to maintain. The last request was for improving lighting levels throughout the East Campus neighborhood. This request is pretty unique. Generally, we receive requests for the installation of lights where there are no currently lights available. The East Campus neighborhood is in an older section of water and light service territory and is served by primary overhead electric system. There are currently over 115 existing street lights within the East Campus neighborhood. These street lights are directly attached to the wood poles that are used for the overhead electric distribution system and are placed at intersections and roughly 200 feet apart from there. This is far more than the minimum of that section 27149 of the city's code of ordinances would require. Staff has also met with several groups that live and or own property within the East Campus neighborhood, including several students, members of the East Campus Neighborhood Association, and rental property owners. Consensus among these groups is divided at best. Staff is seeking direction on whether to commission a study with a lighting consultant to evaluate the lighting levels throughout the East Campus neighborhood. If council is in favor of such a project, staff proposes to issue a request for proposal for these services and will return to council for approval in an appropriation of funds for this project.
Does anyone from council desire to seek recognition? Mr. Scala, for what reason do you seek recognition?
I would like to ask a question of the staff.
Does staff yield to an inquiry?
Yes.
He does proceed.
I've kind of been into this for some period of time. I think the outdoor lighting ordinances started about 1999, and then eventually they were codified in 2006. We avoided getting into street lighting. There were lots of other categories and so on. Although we had said at the time that we might at some point go back to this and revisit this to tweak it and so on. Is that the kind of the message that I'm getting, that the staff is seeking some guidance with respect to how we approach this, not only for this specific instance, but rather how we approach street lighting as it relates to these neighborhood issues as well? Am I reading that correctly?
I believe the request that we have here is really to evaluate street lighting in this area, because you know it is next to campus and there's student and permanent residents in there, and so the street lighting request has become from different folks both up and down. So staff really doesn't have the committee that's been put together doesn't have a clear direction or a clear recommendation on this. We really kind of want to look to see what would fit the neighborhood the best and what would be
so this is kind of a specific instance for this particular neighborhood, and perhaps I'll reserve that for comments later to take a look at this, to refer some of this stuff to the EEC and so on in terms of looking at outdoor lighting requirements for street lighting.
Right, yeah. This is not really an attempt to develop a standard for the entire city. This is just specific to this area that we want to kind of evaluate what's asked, what's there, and what's maybe needed that's specific to this area, and come back with a recommendation that a consultant, a lighting consultant, would make for this.
Right.
Councilman Peters?
Do we have anyone on the staff that has this expertise?
For a lighting consultant?
Yeah, I mean, we put lights in.
Well, we do, but the actual lighting studies themselves, we don't really. I mean, there may be folks that specialize in street lighting as far as roads type design, but if we're actually dealing with pedestrian type lighting needs, I know in the utilities staff, we don't really have anybody that specializes in lighting studies and how you light for pedestrian intensive use or road intensive use, what lighting levels are there. This is something that we in the utilities don't really have anybody that could do the type of work that we know of.
Okay.
Any further questions? Councilman Nauzer?
This is in response to a request, and so we've got three options this evening that you're asking us to approve, either tell you to install one post-top luminary, or there's another one, streetlight to the entrance off Broadway condos, and then have a commission. So how is it we've gone from putting one pole in to the complete asking for an entire study of an entire neighborhood?
This is just what's come out of our lighting committee. So there's two specific lighting requests. One of them, the lighting committee has said we think we should approve this one. The other one, they said the lighting committee says we haven't. The third one is a lighting request in this neighborhood, and the best recommendation out of the lighting committee is get somebody to take a look at this area to make recommendations. So there's actually two council actions that are requested. One is to approve the first request, and then really for your consideration, should we have somebody analyze what lighting is needed in the East Campus neighborhood? Because, I mean, it is next to campus, but it's not campus.
Very different requests.
Okay.
Yes. Just all handle on one.
Pardon me. I mean, I don't think I've ever in all the years I've sat on the council heard of our street lighting committee. Who is the street light committee?
Well, a number of years, we actually brought a report that said we're going to organize this group, because so it involves obviously the utilities that put the street lights up, but obviously we have representatives from sustainability, streets, the police, all the people that kind of go into making a decision from the community perspective, neighborhood services involved with it. So we have a whole group of people from all the disciplines, because they were coming to the utilities a request, and there's so much that's outside what the utility is has to do with. We were going back and forth to all these different folks. We just put the committee together. The requests go to the committee, and we get input from all these different organizations, all these different staff folks at once, and then we bring this committee's opinion back to you from the utility. So like I said, we have folks from the police, neighborhood services, sustainability, road lighting committee, public works, all those folks are put on a representative on this committee.
Any further questions?
I might have.
Pro Tem Ruffin.
What was the motivation for this request? What prompted it? Is anything specific?
For the neighborhood lighting?
Yes.
Several student requests had come in asking for increased lighting levels throughout East Campus neighborhood.
They just feel like it's too dark, basically.
They do.
And I'm assuming they're used to a pedestrian campus lighting, and then they go into the neighborhoods where it's obviously a road lighting scheme as opposed to a pedestrian campus lighting scheme. There's a difference. Not only that, but, you know, the trees are, you know, block some of the light, so there's some issues that go along with this.
Any additional questions? Do we have any concept of what a lighting consultant would charge to look at this?
I don't. That's what we would ask for, and we would bring the results back, this RFP, and you guys would make the decision on whether you want to make the award of this. So you'd make that evaluation. Are you willing to pay for what they're going to give you?
I'm just wondering if there's a better investment of that money to actually improve the lighting rather than just to study improving the lighting.
But does it cost any money to send out a request for proposal?
No. So that's the decision you guys would be making, is once we brought the results back, do you want to award this contract for them to do that or not.
Councilman Nasser.
Well, I'm all for having studies, but I have a, does this open Pandora's box that every neighborhood who feels that they don't have enough lighting is going to ask us to have a lighting consultant come in and study the lighting in their neighborhoods, and how are we going to say no? And so is there any criteria that this steering committee has come up with that might, I think maybe that might be what we tackle first, is come up with a checklist of where we're going.
Before I recognize you to speak again, could I go ahead and open it up for public comment and see if there's any comment that may help illuminate the situation? I'll get that.
Yes.
Ms. Hammond, thank you for being here.
I'm Janet Hammond. I live at 1844 Cliff Drive in the East Campus neighborhood. And I have been aware of this problem in the fall of 2014. Neighborhood Services, Lee Britt Kodwitz, called me and said she had received a complaint about poor lighting in East Campus. And I said, where? And she said, well, maybe it was Bass Avenue. Well, do you know any more? No. So I drove after dark up and down all the streets and found three burned out streetlights. I reported back to Lee and the location of them. And on the north side of Bass Avenue, Stevens College has tennis courts, and that side right there is dark. But the south side seemed fairly well lit. Now, I lived on Wilson Avenue for over 30 years, and I must say, I walked after dark, you know, not at 2 in the morning, but I walked after dark all those years, raised two kids. It is not pedestrian because it is not campus. It's not a parking lot, but it is very well lit, better lit than most residential neighborhoods that I go into. So in December 2014, after a series of emails, and Barbara Hoppe was involved in this, we were again told that some students had perceived opinions of poor lighting. But again, nothing specific. Where? What? When? So we did have email exchanges, and I passed this along. What about lowering some of the lights? Put historic lighting that might be in keeping with our National Historic District on the same poles, and that also would alleviate the light shining in residents' windows, which for years people have complained about these lights that shine into their second-story windows. In February of 2015, Dion George and some other university students organized a walk, probably 30 students. We divided into groups, and I went, and somebody else from East Campus, and I think I'm mistaken, I'm not sure who it was, but no one, it was during the day, no one talked about poor lighting at night. So in December of 2015, I met with a representative from Water and Light and with Lee, and they talked about a consultant, and I brought up my objections that, what is this problem? It seems to have a life of its own, but just really, what is it? There are a lot of lights. I would propose, why not a citizen task force of some composition, with why not bring energy and environmental citizens involved into it, and we talk about it and have a time limit, and we walk through the neighborhood at night, which seems to be what's needed. What about a new method for figuring out when lights are burned out? Because usually that's up to complaints, and if permanent residents aren't living on a particular part of a street, I venture those that does not get noted. So I just think this is a problem looking for a solution or an issue that has a life of its own, and it's not a problem. And I just have not ever been told, well, just what is the problem?
Any questions for Janet Hammond?
Thank you. That's very clarifying.
It seems counterintuitive, but I seem to recall you've been on the Downtown Leadership Council with me, by the way, and thanks for your service. Do you remember a lighting audit or a study that we received the results of? And it seems counterintuitive, but actually the addition of lights in residential neighborhoods actually are counterproductive to public safety because it creates shadows
yes.
that allow people to hide, and as opposed to your eyes naturally acclimating to the ambient light that exists. And I drove your neighborhood, you're right, these are kind of some old wood poles with some old-fashioned, you know, awning-type mm-hmm. lights on them. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do remember that, and I'm sorry I didn't look that up and be able to remark on that, but I do remember that it was counterintuitive, but that is the result of that study. And I will also say at some period of time when I lived on the block of Wilson between Lee Street and South William, some water and light folks added more lighting. So on every single light post was more lighting, and guess what? More students congregated in the middle of the night under those light posts, and we asked them to come take them out, and they came and took them back out. So it's anyway.
Thank you.
May I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
In looking at the information here before us, it's talking that they met with students and neighbors throughout the neighborhood. And so I'm trying to get the feel. So is this predominantly coming from students? And it seems to me that you're telling us that the neighborhood itself of the people who own and live in that neighborhood feel comfortable, and it's predominantly more student concerned, that they're more transient?
Yes, I believe that is the case. I think there might be some areas that seem, when leaves are fully out on the trees, that seem darker. Someone who lived on Ross Street said sometimes she thinks it's kind of dark. But, you know, I ask that we bring these groups together, and I was frustrated in that. There was an email that came out late last year that said we'll have an interested parties meeting. And I did call and protest that and said, wait, we don't know that there's a problem before we have an interested parties meeting. Let's have the groups get together and talk. And then nothing more was done to that regard until this other proposal came out. So, yes, I would say there's some students, and I don't know if this started in 2014 because there was a petition on campus that 2,000 students signed in one day, and obviously they didn't all live in East Campus. Is there more need for more lighting in East Campus? Yes, they all signed it. A St. Louis reporter came and talked to students because they had gone back there that this is so unsafe in East Campus. And I just think, wait, let's not get hysterical. Let's look at this street by street if we need to and see what can improve, you know, or where it might need to be. And, you know, just that place you can go on Bass and look right at those tennis courts. And although that's not the, I understand it's not the objective of street lights to light the sidewalks, you know, we do think of them, it's to make it safer for cars. So could we do something with what we have? And I don't think we need a consultant. I think there's a lot of bright people that could get together on this. And
thank you. Any other questions? Is there anyone else that would like to speak in favor or in opposition? Director Johnson, at one point in the last decade or more, didn't we have some street lights that were provided by Ameren and then we took them back over? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't recall.
These would always have been city-owned street lights.
Yeah, the only public lighting entities in our service in Columbia's area is really Boone Electric and Columbia Water and Light.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, this goes back a long ways. We have some expertise in this with the Environment and Energy Commission. It started in 99 and eventually codified this with the outdoor lighting ordinance. We did not do street lighting as it relates to vehicle safety, but you're quite right. There was a paradoxical effect here in some of the gas station canopies and so on, whereby witness identification was hampered by too much light, and the folks could not see out from the store, neither could the police see into this area, because it was kind of, there was so much light that it was not effective light. And the whole point of the outdoor lighting ordinance was to get effective and efficient light in various venues, whether it be their parking garages or stadiums and, you know, that kind of thing. We kind of assiduously avoided street lighting as it related to traffic, because we didn't have that kind of expertise. But it seems to me that this is a perfectly reasonable kind of thing to refer back to the EEC to take a look at, to see if there needs to be some tweaking citywide, so that we don't run into this situation about just this one application. There's another kind of a confounding issue, and that gets to this issue of the county versus the city, because occasionally there's a request to put lights that are served by the utility, not the city's utility, but rather the electric co-op, and they have different kinds of regulations than we do. So sometimes that we don't always get the best fit. But it seems to me like, and if nothing else, I will ask for that at the end of the comments. To refer some of these matters about residential street lighting as it affects the safety of individuals to the Environment Energy Commission, who had some background in this years ago.
So I want to make one more, any other discussion? Only make one more comment, and then I'm going to make a motion. I wonder if it wouldn't be more cost-effective to send a water and light employee to some additional training that they could, you know, kind of assess best practices in residential neighborhoods and some of this thing, and I don't know that requires any action. I would make a privileged motion to divide the question and naturally and vote section one with one vote and vote section two with a separate vote.
Would second that?
There's a motion. Second, it would be my preference to move the adoption of section one. First of all, is there... Nancy, do you concur with me, Counselor?
I'm looking at the way it's written. Certainly, I think this is you can do it that way.
Gentlemen's made a privileged motion to divide the question, seconded by Councilman Peters. All those in favor of dividing the question indicate by saying aye.
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 Without objection, we'll proceed. Any additional discussion on Section 1? I would make a motion that we adopt Section 1. The City Council hereby authorizes the installation of 138-watt LED decorative post-op luminaire on the east side of Elderbrook Drive as one vote. Any objection? Do you need a roll call for that?
So we're not amending the bill and voting on the bill. How are we doing this?
It is treated as an amendment of the bill, where you're dividing the bill into two different pieces. So you will do a roll call vote on the first half, and you'll do a roll call vote on the second half.
Okay.
Madam Clerk, call the roll on Section 1 of Council Bill...
Resolution.
Resolution...
4716.
47-16.
Okay. Council Bill 4716, Section 1, Mr. Treese.
Vote aye on Section 1.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
The ayes appear to have it by a vote of 5-0. You have approved Section 1. Mr. Scala, would you like to make a motion on Section 2 to refer this to Energy and Environment, or would you like to reject? My motion would be to reject Section 2.
I certainly would. I would like to make the motion to refer this the study of this, at least in the short term, to the Energy and Environment Energy Commission for a report back about their findings. So
I would second that motion. Is there any discussion on that, on the motion Section 2? Anyone? Madam Clerk, call the roll to refer Section 2 to the Energy and Environment Commission.
Council Bill 4716, Section 2, Mr. Treese?
Aye.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Now, for clarification purposes, just going forward, what we will do is we will treat that as an amendment of that resolution, deleting out that section and refer it to the Environment and Energy Commission. And if it comes back then to you, it will come back as a separate measure.
Thank you.
Is that acceptable?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Next order of business be Council Resolution 48-16. Madam Clerk, read the resolution.
Council Bill 4816 is a resolution recognizing the Water and Light Association as an appropriate representative unit of employees with a mutually acceptable community of interest separate from other City of Columbia employees.
Staff report, please.
We have gone through a process with this group. They were the Water and Light Association 10 years ago. They went through a process and were recognized and did a vote with the State Board of Mediation to be represented by IBEW Local 2. They did that for 3 years and then decertified that group, and so they have been without representation for a couple of years. 1 year they had to be. They came and filed a petition with the State Board this year to be recognized just the electric utility, and the list of positions that they gave us to consider for that included a position that was in power production in the power plant. That group was already represented by another union, Local 773 of Laborers International Union of North America. So the city, the petitioners, and Local 773, with the State Board helping us, had a discussion about what was the right group of people to be represented by this group. It was actually a really good outcome for everybody, and Local 773 allowed power production to go with the rest of the electric utility and gave them up to that group. And so we now have a group that includes the electric utility, and finally the power production people are with them, and the water utility, because the petitioners agreed to take the water employees because they had been represented in the past. So that gave us one cohesive group rather than several pieces of one. And so they've gone through that process. We've had discussions about which classifications should be in that. That's attached to this, and they've done everything that they needed to do. The State Board said they will accept our resolution as what the recognized unit is, and so it's a good outcome for everybody.
Are there any questions for Ms. Buckler? How many members are in that bargaining unit?
I think when we get all of them together, there'll be well over 220, 230.
And what was your, that was, did the Board of State Board of Mediation conduct an election for that exclusive bargaining unit?
They petitioned the electric, just the electric division employees petitioned to be recognized, and they were going to have an election, but they included a position that was covered by another union already. And so we went through a process with the State Board to talk about it, and we had a conference call with Local 773, the petitioners, and the city to talk about how we might resolve this, and they said they don't need an election if we agree to this
group
voluntary
mutually. Recognition.
Yes.
Okay. Is there anyone from the public that would like to speak? Anyone? Anyone? Thank you. Is there any discussion by council? I would make a motion that we adopt the resolution.
A second.
Madam Clerk, call the roll.
Council Bill 4816, Mr. Treese?
Aye.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Scholar?
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Next order of business will be introduction and first reading. Madam Clerk, read the bills.
Council, all bills are introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated. Bills 9316, 9416, 9516, 9616, 9716, 9816, 9916, 116, 101, 102, 16, 103, 16, 104, 16, 105, 16, 106, 16, 107, 16, 108, 16, 109, 16, 110, 16, 111, 16, and 112, 16, first reading.
You need any further action?
No.
Next order of business will be reports, and I will remind you that at my first meeting it's at 8:19, and we're already at the reports, and I like to keep that agenda moving.
Yeah, you better enjoy it.
Happen often.
staff report on, I don't know what's typical here, this is important to me, the African-American Heritage Trail. Mr. Griggs, would you like to, or Ms. Messina, report 33-16, please?
Sure, we can split this responsibility. I've been working with the Sharp End Heritage Committee for probably the last year and a half, and last May, that group, with the help of some private sponsors, managed and coordinated through the Columbia Daily Tribune, raised money to put a marker at the former Sharp End Black Business District on Walnut between 5th and 6th Streets on the north side of the parking garage. That group wants to stay together, and it's committed to marking at least the top 10 sites on an African American Heritage Trail. They will do that through finding individual private sponsors for those markers, and because we have the expertise in Parks and Recreation to install and maintain markers and map trails, it looked like a good way to forge a public-private partnership for this purpose.
On the trails, we started the trail program back when we did the Beulah Ralph Memorial Marker as well as the Flat Branch Park. We looked at some of those areas. We'll probably be looking at a marker for the Blind Boone home, and so that will be part of it. So we just had our park planners look at something that was in a downtown area that would be a nice walkable trail that could provide that history, and the map you have enclosed in your packet kind of outlines that draft map.
Any questions of staff? Anyone? Thank you. The next report appears to be informational. Report 34-16, broadband update. Are there any questions or any update from staff quickly?
Well, in 2013, the City of Columbia, University of Missouri and Ready commissioned a needs assessment to determine the community's broadband needs. This study focused on availability, cost, and reliability of high-speed internet in the health, education, and business sectors. At that time, the Magellan advisors were chosen to perform this broadband needs assessment and planning study. This study recommended that the city investigate implementing public policy tools and develop broadband approach to and a broadband business plan. After this study, several Missouri state legislature bills were proposed to prohibit or limit the municipality's offering in the broadband internet service. By fall of 2015, numerous incumbents have also indicated that they have the ability to provide infrastructure to deploy fiber-based gigabit services to the community. At this time, we have contracted with Magellan Advisors to update this 2014 report, which was based on the data collected in 2013. As part of this update, Magellan will complete a current broadband market analysis to see where we are and provide field verification survey of the services available to the community in broadband services. At this time, Magellan's update is expected to be provided to the staff and consequently the council by summer of 2016, this year. So that's kind of where we are. I believe the request was to kind of get an update of where we were with our broadband analysis, planning, and initiatives.
Are there any questions, Councilman Nauzer?
Real quick, have you heard anything down at the state that they're going to start pushing this issue again as they did when we had the original broadband report come to the council? Or is this opening, this will be their open door to start?
So, legislative update, there have been at least one bill introduced to preempt cities from providing broadband service.
Again this session.
It hasn't passed at this point. It might. The federal government has preempted states who have tried to preempt cities, which is an interesting situation to be in. So what we're trying to do here is see, you know, if the market really has taken care of it, then great. But we're hearing lots of different intel about they don't really offer it, or it's only offered in very small places. And so we just want to find out what are the facts on the ground before we take action.
Councilman Nauzer, are you finished? Councilman Scala.
Yeah, this too has a long history because we were in discussions with Magellan when the former mayor, Mayor McDavid, and the city manager, we were all talking about this and whether or not the city has its resources with dark fiber and what to do with the ends, whether to light up the ends. And I remember some of the recommendations, and I frankly, in my opinion, we ought to try and move forward and get as much information as possible, move as quickly as possible to try and get ahead of the game, if you will, in terms of whether the state decides on its own merits to once again affect local policy. So I, from my perspective, I think this is just a continuation. It's an update, if I understand correctly. And I think I asked for this just to find out where we are to make sure that we can move forward. I think there was some other discussion, even with the infrastructure task force, if you will, on whether or not to expand some of their purview. We haven't taken that up, and I don't know how the council feels about that. But in terms of fiber and this kind of resource as well. So for what it's worth, as an update, I think this is the way to move forward.
Do you need any action on this?
No, it's purely informational.
Staff report 35-16.
This also is informational. At each meeting, we provide all of the transfers that have happened in internal to departments. So we list these for you. If you have any questions, I'm happy to.
Any net fiscal impact?
No.
Anyone desire to take action? We'll move on to general comments by public counsel and staff. Is there anyone from the public that would like to speak? Mr. Clark.
My name is John Clark. I'm an attorney and an accountant in Columbia. I live at 403 North 9th Street. So my first thing is I want to congratulate Councilman Ruffin on the many years of work that have resulted in the opening of the Blind Boone House coming in September as a community center and an historical site. This has been a long time coming. The council has been quite supportive. There have been many ups and downs, but this is deserving. Some of these things take a long time. That doesn't mean they don't deserve a big round of applause when they finally happen. I think I should have stood up when Janet Hamm was speaking. I'm quite interested in the process by which the bill on the lighting in East Campus came about. I applaud you for the use of the motion of division to deal with that. But I'm curious as to how it got to the stage of including a proposal to hire an outside consultant, you know, kind of before it got to this meeting. I would also ask the staff to dig deep, deep back in the files and call Carl Cruz on the phone. The whole lighting system, the whole idea about standards, because I take the discussion that Janet brought up about appropriateness of lighting in various places. In his terms, and we're now talking about 20 years ago, you know, lots of cities have systematically looked at a whole variety of issues and adopted some approaches, in some ways reminiscent of the street standards design process we went through before. I would encourage you to ask the staff to dig this all up and plunk it on your desk just to get a good look at what thinking about such policy might look like. That doesn't mean it's something new, but it can take a long time to find all this stuff. I'm very pleased to hear the reports about the trail and about the update on the Magellan thing. So my last thing is going to make a suggestion. I never hear anybody, I mean, we go down to the legislature. We've got our legislative person we hire. They're going to lobby. I think the best strategy for stopping the state adopting these preemptive rules is for us to talk to the other cities that are going to have the same problem. There are other cities that, in fact, do not want the state to do this. And for us to take the lead in talking to those other cities and developing a cooperative strategy, I think, should be looked at. I got into this years and years ago when, in fact, we had issues with the library district, which should automatically extend when the city extended, but it didn't. And we missed an opportunity years and years ago to go to the legislature with Greene County and Springfield and several of them, all of whom were stuck with this rule that didn't automatically expand the boundaries and therefore the bonding issues. We're going to have an opportunity to do that again. I would ask you to seriously consider that strategy.
Thank you, Mr.
going
Park.
Forward. Thank you very much.
Does anyone from council desire to seek recognition?
I do.
Mayor Pro Tem. Oh, excuse me. Pardon me. Eugene Elkins, please join us. I don't know what I was thinking.
Since I see maybe three or four that might have spoke, Eugene Elkin, 3406 Rangeline, I do want to congratulate you on your election. Something just came to mind. I've talked about it a few times over the years. It's this natural gas station that came from nowhere, the airport that's under constant development when there's no money. Apparently city revenue's going down. We've got taxation going against the general public for schools. We are going to be in very bad shape if we're throwing money away at just any one point in this city. Paratransit, I look over this week and I see a very, very expensive vehicle and it says paratransit on the side. And I go, holy cow. It's being powered by CNG, the Central Columbia Natural Gas. And I think, where did the money come from? Things for you as the new mayor or different ones to look into is how's all this coming about. As we go through a new mayorship, maybe you council people, some of you have served a long time. How about a 9 o'clock general comments? Maybe you have two of them per night. That takes care of the disabled, takes care of the council who think that after a couple hours they could use a bathroom break because some of you have to walk out. I don't blame you. I watch you stand up. Your backs are killing you. I've been here a long time just watching, and I can put myself in your shoes and say, hey, think about it. It's not going to ruin your entire meeting to have, say, 15 minutes. So-and-so needs to get to bed. You might need to go to the bathroom. And the end comments, maybe it'll be one person, it'll be zero. Think about all those suggestions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Elkin. Continue to tell me how I can do things differently or better. Anyone else from the public desire to address the city council? Seeing none, Councilman Ruffin, please proceed.
Yes, I just want to thank Mr. Clark for acknowledging the long history of those who have envisioned the complete revitalization of the Boone House. It is happening. I want to say that since the beginning in 1997, the vision was always for it to be a community center rather than a museum, and that vision is coming to pass. We are working on a policy document and developing a website that will promote the house, and that none of that has been launched yet, and still there's great demand for the use of the house. Already, we have hosted two delegations from Korea who have come to tour the house and to watch the documentary on Blind Boone. We've hosted the CID's retreat, and we are being considered as the ideal location for a reception for Ben Vereen in this summer. And also this week, an after-school tutoring program will host an outdoor picnic on the grounds and take a tour of the house and have a guest speaker. So this is exactly how we envision the house would be used as an important location for the entire community, and it's already happening, and we haven't even begun to promote the house yet. We are working to complete it, still seeking additional funding for the installation of the tribute gardens. The city has done an amazing hardscape, but all of the trees and plants still need to be purchased and installed. We are working to complete some of the finishing details inside of the house as well, with wallpaper and painting and other things like that. So in the end, when it opens in September, it will be a spectacular and a wonderful place that will be a fitting tribute to all those who envision what it would become. And this is in the First Ward. I also want to acknowledge another program that is happening in the First Ward, which is the expansion project for the Boys and Girls Club at their main campus, which is near Hickman High School. It's a $2.5 million project to more than double the space that they have now by building a multipurpose performance
and gym and expanded kitchen, teen center, as well as expanded restrooms and other areas that will make the Boys and Girls Club much more effective in their ability to reach a larger demographic of our young people. They serve more than 700 children every week and have provided more than 42,000 meals during the year. And in terms of our agenda for social equity, this has become an important project because right now the Boys and Girls Club struggles to provide programming for older teenagers who are between the grades of eighth grade and 12th grade, and so there's just not much for them to do, and so they tend to drop out of the program. They're too young, many of them, to get jobs, and so the challenge is there to provide something for these underserved teenagers, and the Boys and Girls Club has been doing an effective job but desires to do much more. So we are entering into our public phase for the fundraising, and we welcome anyone who is willing to donate money of any amount so that we can hopefully celebrate a groundbreaking for the expansion project in October of this year. This is an urgent need that is reflective of our agenda for social equity, and we want to see it done and done quickly and done well. Finally, a couple of weeks ago, I inquired about the possibility of some form of diversity training for the council so that we will all have a common vocabulary when we talk about the issues of race and diversity in our community. And I haven't heard much more about that, whether or not it's possible or whether or not it's on the agenda for future meetings of the council. But I would like to raise that again because I think it is critical and necessary for all of us going forward to speak the same language.
Could we consider that at our retreat meeting this Thursday and Friday?
That's a great time to talk about it. Yeah.
Thank you. That's it.
Councilman Nauzer, you are the most senior member. May I ask you to proceed next?
Yes, thank you. I have several things this evening to ask. I received an email that was talking about when the city council was given books by the city manager, if we would provide copies of those books to the public library so that the community can also be privileged to read the information that we're given. So I would like to make that request that the city, its council and senior staff are given books, that two copies be given to the public library so that people could have access to that. I have a very active Fifth Ward these days. I've received a copy of a petition, again, from some residents in the Grasslands this time regarding the sidewalk along Burnham Road. And so I would just like for staff to take this and just provide a report to my fellow council members on the status of this project, because I think there are several people that are on the council that were not part of all of these discussions. So if we may do that. We were talking about streetlights earlier. And I just would like to remind staff that I did have a request for Water and Light to look at the west outer road along Providence from Stony Creek down to the reactor field. That is a very dangerous area in our community. I was just over there this weekend, and it was broad daylight, and there are students and people walking along a very narrow path. Even in the daylight, it's hazardous. So I can only imagine students walking from some student apartments over there down to Reactor Field at any time in the evening. It certainly would be very precarious, to say the least. So if we can look at that, maybe getting a couple of lights, even just on some of the electric poles that may be close to the road, to provide some kind of lighting in that area would be most beneficial. And then I was reading in the newspaper about our budget and the potential to have a decrease in our general revenues because of our revenues not coming in to what we anticipated. And there were some discussions about making cuts to the police department, and I am just going to voice my concern and opposition. I would like to see the police department and our public safety departments off the chopping block. I think we need to focus. We're
we're behind, we don't need to get further behind. I'd rather have a few potholes, less potholes get fixed, and have enough police officers on the road. So that's my position on this. I know we'll probably be talking about this at the upcoming council retreat, but I did want to make a public statement that I think public safety should be first and foremost as we move forward in a declining budget. And I'm glad to hear that the Blind Boone home will be opening, and I'm excited for that. I think that's, you know, sadly was one of the controversial things that we had several years ago about funding that building. And, you know, we just had the dedication or the group giving us the plaque this evening. And so I think that I actually had somebody contact me today saying that they felt that that was divisive. And so I was trying to think of how honoring and talking about our past is divisive. And I'm happy to see that as a community we're moving forward and talking about these things and these issues, because you can't heal and we can't move forward unless we talk about these things. So I'm very pleased to see us moving forward, and thank you for all your great work on that.
And Councilman Scallon.
Yeah, I have about five things. Let me try and collapse some of these things down. Mr. Ruffin was talking about social equity. That, of course, is a very important concept that came out of the strategic plan that the city had. My last campaign was centered around that as one of the planks, essentially, in my platform. I'm happy to say that I think we're making great progress in lots of ways with respect to social equity, not the least of which are some improvements in the Third Ward in this reallocation of resources because of these three targeted areas, both in the First Ward, Second Ward, and Third Ward. And that also affects public safety, and it also affects infrastructure as well, these kinds of things. I was happy to hear as well these proposals about the historic trail, if you will. I think that fits in with the Blind Boone House. This discussion about it, the reemergence of the discussion, the Blind Boone House. I can remember when I ran for office in 2013, was pledged by everybody, my opponents and all the candidates were talking about this. And we took some heat on the city council for funding this out of some of those. But I even look at this as, again, I mentioned it before, as a public safety issue. This divisiveness has got to stop, and this is one way to do that kind of thing. And by the way, for the retreat, there are some tremendous resources that the National League of Cities has. I'm a member of the Racial Equity and Leadership Group that have provided racial toolkits, if you will, that kind of thing. I'll make those available once again. We can take a look at that and discuss some of those things. So that's that area with respect to social equity, which I think is of utmost importance for this new council to get involved in. Now a couple of more less important things, if you will, but important to some of my constituents, I guess. And here's a way of perhaps even saving some money. This would be novel, wouldn't it? I mean, when it comes to public safety, perhaps, too. This has come up on a number of occasions. My daughter was in town, sadly, for a funeral that I was a part of, and she is a police officer in Columbus, Ohio. And she was talking about that. We've got to talking about it. She was talking about the same kinds of things that we have talked about on occasion, that is the false alarms for security that people have. There's an increasing need for security. More people have security alarms and so on. Is there a way, or could I ask for a report to take a look at whether we want to approach this from a point of view of fee for service, if you will, with respect to false alarms, or in some cities, I think they even have a flat fee that they charge per month in addition to. At any rate, we could take a look at some benchmark cities and some solutions to this, which might alleviate some of the service calls, unnecessary service calls. For failures, false positives on some of these things. And I don't know the extent to which that would affect the budget, but it certainly would affect it in some fashion. So a report on that would be helpful. And then there was another, I just get a call today, too, about, I know, and we've talked about this as well, And that is because of the lack of public safety officers, we had to dial back our reporting of tickets and reports, if you will, for accidents without injuries. And the call that I got today had to do with community service personnel coming out there and deciding this was a no-fault accident. And then the folks were referred to their insurance companies, and since it was no fault, there were no reports, no tickets given, and so on. And I guess this is gets to be kind of an onerous burden, and it makes one wonder why you even have insurance if you're going to, if someone hits you, for example, that you're going to wind up paying the bill. So just a report, generate a report on where we are with this and what the policy is, and just so folks understand it and we can explain it more adequately than we've been able to do to this point. That's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Scalic. Councilman Peters.
I'd just like to congratulate you about the Blind Boone home also. And I have to second Ms. Nauser's request not to lose any more police officers or firemen. Otherwise, no, my ward is in good shape and everyone's happy.
Everyone's happy.
Best I know until they all email me tomorrow.
So,
well, except the streetlights, but we'll work on that.
So to that end, let me follow up on a discussion that we had at the candidate or the council orientation on Tuesday evening. And Mr. Mathis, you asked or you announced that you had implemented a 30-day hiring freeze on new hires, and one of the things that I would like to specifically do, and while we can take up, I think there's is near unanimous consent with respect to budgeting, and we can deal with that in the next fiscal year, but specifically within this fiscal year, I would like to exempt police and firefighters from that 30-day hiring freeze. I think it's hard enough to recruit and retain police and firefighters in those positions, and I think the last thing we need to do is introduce a gap in that hiring process, because once word gets out that, you know, Columbia has a 30-day gap, they may go to another community, and I would like to ask for council's support to join me in that, just to provide you the direction you need to proceed without affecting the police and firefighters. Objection to that. All right. I also had correspondence from Judge Chris Kelly regarding the infrastructure task force. He served at the pleasure of Mayor McDavid. He has announced his resignation. I would like to appoint Tracy Griever Rice to chair that mayor's infrastructure task force so that she can quickly conclude that commission's recommendations and get them to council in time for us to incorporate them into our discussion about the Uniform Development Code and potential infrastructure impacts. That seems to be consistent with the process that Mayor McDavid did when he appointed that commission. That commission, of course, is a product of the Downtown Leadership Council, at least in some form, by title, if nothing else. And I would like to have Ms. Griever Rice serve in that. And I don't know if that needs consent of the council, but I would ask for that. Without objection.
It does not. That, as I recall, that task force does not need consent of the council. It is the mayor's appointment.
No, it doesn't. But that's a good choice.
She's up to speed. She has followed the progress of that committee and had a very good conversation with Judge Kelly.
Choice.
He was more than 50% of the way through. There are two or three modules left in that commission's work. That commission naturally expires by resolution in August. They've been meeting twice a month, which effectively is about six meetings. And she assured me that she has time to quickly get up to speed and take on that mantle. Councilman Scalley.
Yeah, she incidentally served initially on the first infrastructure task force with Ben Landre and myself, too. So, I mean, that's a good choice.
Thank you. And second, or finally, let me just say that last week the University of Missouri announced that they were closing two additional dormitories because of declining enrollment. And, you know, throughout my campaign, as I talked to neighborhoods about infrastructure and student housing, you know, I had a lot of feedback on that. And I'm wondering if maybe it isn't timely for us to have a discussion about the student housing economy and whether we are inadvertently contributing to a housing bubble in those types of projects. And I say that my natural tendency is to let the private sector determine that and bottom out on that, but to the extent the City of Columbia may be subsidizing that type of development through preferred infrastructure costs or preferred development fees or less restrictive parking requirements or no retail requirements, that maybe we're not propping up an economy here that ultimately could force all of us to pay the price for that. And let me make a couple observations here. You know, to the extent our development costs and our build out of infrastructure was related to the projected number of units that we see in that pipeline, and if those units are not filled, that affects our investment of that infrastructure. And for both the existing student housing projects that are already built, already filled, along with the public dormitories at the University of Missouri level, if those units are only 85% occupied, nobody's going to make any money, and there will be a failure, and then we have a glut on that economy. And I'm wondering if there is some consensus here at the council level to ask staff to bring back some ideas as to a potential administrative delay or at least some stopgap, if you will, while we consider that uniform development code and get some of those additional protections or at least considerations in place so that we can take a more thoughtful review of that marketplace.
Would that be considered a moratorium on development? And I know we've had this conversation before about you can't arbitrarily put a moratorium on specific types of properties. It would have to be across the board.
You can do an administrative delay as it relates to, you know, a particular zoning district or a particular area. If there is a concern, we can identify and articulate a concern, or if there is a particular concern identified, and while you undertake study and implement solutions for that.
But would student housing, that would be more than one zoning district, correct? It would be potentially C2 and any planned zoning, because I mean they could put it out in any vacant property.
You know, at this point in time, it'd be too early to tell. I think what the mayor has just suggested is to come back with, you know, a plan or to come back with thought or study. At this point in time, I don't think we would be prepared to actually respond to that, because it, whether it's citywide, whether it is C2 designated, whether it is any R3 housing, R4 housing, you know, I don't know what the request is at this point in that level of detail, other than just to have a discussion. If I'm understanding what you're saying.
I'm wondering if it wouldn't be helpful to at least establish some type of baseline as to how many units we have currently, how many have been approved, and how many potential more are in the pipeline, and how that you know, mirrors where the university is with respect to their perspective in enrollment numbers. And I think one solution there would be to make it geographically limited. You could also make it limited to just 3- and 4-bedroom units, so at least there's some incentive for adaptive reuse for young professionals, seniors, et cetera. Councilman Scala.
Yeah, well, I think these are certainly worthwhile to follow this track, at least for information. One of the problems here is it's devilishly difficult to get these occupancy numbers. I mean, they don't really have to be revealed. And some of the various of the private sector even uses indexes of utility payments, because some of these numbers are not publicly available. So, as I understand it, there was an attempt early on with some of the Odles project to criticize some of the rest of the development community in terms of their numbers of 95% occupancy, because one of the bedrooms, if they were occupied in a 4-bedroom suite, was considered full occupancy. That shows you the difficulty in getting some of these accurate numbers. But I certainly think that this track about getting an idea about the C2 prior to the challenges that we're going to face with the Unified Development Code is something for at least the City Council to look into and weigh in on, along with the private sector.
Councilman Peters.
I would also think we should consider the R3, the residential R3 areas also, because they are ripe for redevelopment or I don't want to say quite exploitation, that's probably too strong a word, but if we limit downtown building or we put a administrative hold on this while we do the zoning, while we look at the unified code, I'm not sure that's not just going to push things over into the Old Southwest or the East Campus or more into Benton Stevens and the North Central. And if we were to consider something like this, then I think we need a time frame on this, because we do need to get through the unified code, and at some point it's not appropriate for the property owners to not be able to develop or to use their property as they want. So, you know, I think we should look at this, and I agree, I'd like to know what we have in the pipeline and what we have down, what we have available. But we might want to consider if we just want downtown or if we want to include the older surrounding neighborhoods also.
Mr. Mathis, does that give you some direction to come back potentially by the first meeting in May with
Pandora's buyers.
Some options?
Yes, I'm hearing come back with some language about an administrative delay inside of which we will conduct quite a bit of research and give you as much information as we can about the state of the current development cycle for dense student housing downtown and throughout the city. And it may take a few months at least. It would take a few months at least to do that research, and I would expect, you know, some time for discussion. I would recommend a 6-month administrative delay. So that's the kind of thing I'd come back with language wise.
Got it.
So what we
you're
put
not
in,
saying it would take you months to bring back some proposals for our consideration, are you?
No, I'm thinking okay. For the whole conversation, it might take that long, but there's a lot of data we have now that we can get to you quickly. But in terms of what options are available to address those shortcomings, you know, you're going to want to compare kind of the concerns about a bubble and what it does if you have more development downtown. Pipeline that's coming, what does that do to the student housing on Nifong and farther out? I know their vacancy rates are significantly higher than downtown's. So you know, we can give you as much data about that as we can, and then describe what other cities have done to try to constrain a downturn in that. You know, if you overbuild, the market will adjust eventually, but then there's this transition between, you know, who goes out of business and how do you reuse 4-bedroom units effectively, so we can come back with discussion about that. For example, Decatur, Georgia has reused a 4-bedroom one development effectively. It's pretty rare, but many of them don't get reused very effectively if they empty. They can't. This has happened in other places, overbuilt, and so we can give you our best judgment, our best information about where we sit today as it relates to the student population, and vacancy rates that we have.
Councilman Peters? Councilman Nelson?
I would also ask, too, that if we're going to go down this path, that we certainly want to include the university and have conversations with them, because I do know they talked about having a dip today due to several reasons. One, demographics of children going through high school and graduating, but that trend is also going to reverse itself at some point in time. I don't know exactly when, but they have all of that data. And there was also some changes in other key markets, college markets across the country, that allowed, say, Illinois and places like that to be able to recruit more. So they've got an increase in competition. So I think we need to have the full story on this, and also want to see what other communities may have done in this, and some of those laws of unintended consequences, such type of actions of putting moratoriums. mm-hmm. on certain types of properties, because it not only affects student housing, but it could affect apartments for low income as well. And so we certainly don't want to hamstring mm-hmm. development.
So it's a discussion of, you know, where it's gone too far. What were those programs? Why did they not work?
Right.
Versus where has it worked? And fair enough. Yep.
Comfortable with that?
Yep.
Further discussion?
We'll return as soon as we can with language to establish the delay and then try to give a scope of work about what the research would be.
I want to thank you for your patience tonight with me as a new mayor and chair. And is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Motion is second. Without objection, we are adjourned.
Only 9 o'clock.
Yeah, this is a short
I know.
Oh, don't. I can just